You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. I'm Ava Berardi. The Astoria City Council continued its forward momentum on various components of a new Shelter First policy at a meeting Monday night. Katie Frankowitz has more.
The city councilors solidified changes to Astoria's camping code with amendments that encourage a case-by-case approach to unhoused people who are camping in public areas. The amendments also look to encourage people to pursue other resources and follow city rules. Under the amended code, people can be trespassed from an area if they are camping illegally or repeatedly violating city rules around camping. Additionally, the amended code sets the penalty for violating the camping ordinance at a flat fee of $35. At the same meeting on Monday, city councilors also took a first look at a proposed community-based shelter program that they hope will further supplement shelter options in the city and provide people with a pathway to something more permanent. City councilors rejected a pilot program that would have explicitly encouraged vehicle camping at the sites, but approved a concept that would create 1 to 3 sites in the city with 3 micro shelters and on-site sanitation and garbage services at each site. City councilors said that if participating property owners want to allow vehicle camping, they could. Under the proposed pilot program, guests would be limited to a full stay length of 180 days. The city would oversee the program, providing day-to-day administration, oversight, and enforcement of city rules, as well as providing the on-site amenities. Port of Astoria leaders say they believe a security guard who allowed federal immigration enforcement officers to access fenced-off property at the port on June 7th followed state law and did the right thing in difficult circumstances. Port Commission President Dirk Roan told KMUN ICE officers claimed an emergency situation when they asked for access to the port property on June 7th. Roan did not elaborate further, but said the port employee followed state law by not hindering the federal officers. The arrest of 2 men on June 7th by ICE officers caused concern among local activists and immigration advocates. They also contend that the use of port property by ICE to stage federal vehicles may have violated Oregon sanctuary law. The Oregon Department of Justice has sent the port an inquiry letter. The port says it is working with the state. But some Clatsop County residents are pushing for more from the port. At a Port Commission meeting Tuesday afternoon, Warrenton resident Deborah Ferenczi said she wanted to see transparency from the port about how it understood its obligations under Oregon sanctuary laws.
I'd like to see communication around findings of any violations of that law and how you intend to remedy our assumption that your staff is not receiving adequate training around that law.
She said she wants port leaders to talk to their attorney about their ability to limit ICE actions on port property in the future. She noted that most of the community members who were present on June 7th and who were denied access to the fenced area where ICE appeared to be staging vehicles were there as legal observers. She said they were exercising their First Amendment right to openly record and document law enforcement performing their duties in public spaces. At Tuesday's meeting, commissioners thanked people for their input. Roan said he shared their concerns and that he hoped to share more information about the June 7th incident in the future. Oregon Governor Tina Kotek has declared an emergency due to the threat of wildfires in the state. Kotek said increasing heat, dry vegetation, and shifting winds are creating dangerous conditions that require immediate action, and she said conditions will get worse throughout the summer. The declaration ensures that the Oregon Department of Forestry and the State Fire Marshal's Office have the wildfire crews and resources they need. Kotek said the state has already seen over 400 fires this year. They've burned more than 8,000 acres. The emergency declaration is in effect until the end of the year or until the wildfire threat is significantly reduced. Oregon has seen an uptick in the number of people with mental illness who are committed into state care. As Dirk Vanderhart reports, that could be tied to a recent change in state law.
Under Oregon's civil commitment laws, people suffering from severe mental illness can be put into state custody for up to 6 months, and the 51 people committed in May is the highest number the state has seen since at least 2022. But it's unclear if that's a brief spike or part of a new trend. The state's civil commitment laws changed in January. Judges now have more leeway to force people into care. State officials are wary about drawing conclusions, but note they're seeing a change. Chana Newell is an attorney for the Oregon Judicial Department.
When you get to the commitment hearing, you're having more people being committed. And we don't have an explanation for this.
Newell told lawmakers Tuesday that the state is waiting for more time to pass before determining what impact the new law has had. I'm Dirk Vanderhaar, reporting.
You're listening to News on KMUN.
It's a stereotype that Pacific Northwesterners love the outdoors, but there's a reason for that. Oregon has many beautiful places to be outside, and although not everyone feels comfortable outside, there are people who are working to make the outdoors a welcoming space. OPB's Lisa Wood recently spent some time with two people who lead unique outdoor adventures.
On a sunny spring day in Portland's Mount Tabor Park, the hum of daily life fades away. The winding roads and wooded trails that climb through the towering firs, maples, and about 50-something other species of trees lead to sparkling reservoirs lined by lush hillsides. Joggers, picnickers, and bicyclists pass by, and 20 or so people are gathered around two hike leaders to learn more about the nature here.
Look at this little hoverfly, darling. They are doing something called cryptic mimicry. Other species will see them and be like, oh, that's a bee. I'm not going to mess with that. I'm not going to try to eat that. These little guys are super duper cute, and they're amazing pollinators, like all flies are. Oh, and now they're fighting. Boys, boys, please, there's enough of me to go around.
That's Thespis Delight. He's one half of the pair who have created a new bi-monthly nature walk called Drag Me Outside.
Drag's supposed to be radical, and so is education. So let's put those things together. That's exactly what people need right now.
That's Ephemera Gendera, the other half of the equation. She's a biologist and environmental scientist. Thespis is a park ranger and wildlife conservationist. Between them, they have over two decades of experience. These walks were born out of a love for our environment and building community.
We want people to feel like they are welcome in the outdoors, regardless of what society has decided they can or cannot do. Everybody's allowed outside. Everybody should have a place on our hikes. You should always have an emotional support drag performer with you.
The pair are as colorful as our surroundings. They're impossible to miss. Thespis is in a fringy jacket with dangly pearl earrings and hair made out of blue and gold sparkly ribbons. It's a strong Prince vibe. Ephemera made her dress today. It's a light blue tribute to Mother Earth with rain cloud shoulder pads and a rainbow belt with a sun buckle. She's also rocking lavender hair piled high on her head and knee-high vinyl heels. To test a location, Ephemera walks the paths ahead of time in heels. If she can't do it, it doesn't make the cut.
Hello, everybody. Thank you all so much for coming out to this Mother's Day Drag Me Outside.
Happy Mother's Day.
We are here not just to enjoy nature, not just to see our beautiful faces, but also to build community.
The outings are popular. Ephemera and Thespis aim to create a fun, inclusive, educational, low-impact experience.
Our icebreaker question is, what is your favorite bird? I am just going to go ahead and stick with the northern flicker. They are a species of woodpecker, and they are so cool, and I really hope we see some today.
Participants list off eagle, penguin, raven, and albatross, among others. And then Ephemera chimes in.
My favorite bird is a cedar waxwing. If you've never seen it, they look like they've been spray brushed. They will pick berries off of plants and feed them to each other and pass them around. If they eat too many overripe berries, they will be laying on the ground drunk.
The Audubon Society gets calls about cedar waxwings when they've had a few too many. If you see this, they're okay. They just need to sleep it off. Ephemera asks participants to put phones away, be present, and find connection with nature and this community. But first,
I'm going to call my mom and wish her a happy Mother's Day. If anybody would like to join me in this. I will call her later.
Alrighty, my friends, we are about to start the hike.
The walk is roughly 2 hours and 2 miles with lots of educational breaks.
Look at all of these sword ferns. Looks like this is actually a super new. You can see the baby sword ferns. Oh, they're so little. Grow up big and strong and restore that wall.
We stop at a ridge above two of Mount Tabor's reservoirs.
The person dressed like Miss Frizzle is about to teach you something. We're on an extinct volcano. Mount Tabor was an island surrounded by really dense forests. In 1846, there was a big wildfire that happened from about the Lentz neighborhood all the way up to the Columbia. That allowed the white man to come in and start to settle down.
The walk is part science, part philosophy, and part history.
There was this guy, last name spelled Pretty Man. He was a doctor, and he brought dandelions with him for his medicine purposes. Can anybody here tell me why grass is bad? Lack of biodiversity, yes. What else?
Takes up a bunch of water.
Yes. We use more water in this country to irrigate grass than anything else. And what does it do for us? Nothing.
Mount Tabor has 5 reservoirs. They housed Portland's water supply until recently when it was switched over to Bull Run. It's one of the few places in the U.S. with an intact watershed. But drinking water from outside isn't always the best idea.
Survival tip with Thespis. If you're ever outside and you need water, get it from a running source of water because there's nothing that can sit in it. Raccoons are awesome and they're very clean babies. They will go to the bathroom in puddles. They will wash their little bodies in puddles. So please only drink out of running streams. I am begging you.
Thespis stops the group at a fluffy, bright green bush.
Oh, we got some thimbleberries here. They are a really beautiful native berry plant. A ranger that I worked with called them nature's toilet paper because they are the softest leaves. So if we are very gentle, I highly recommend everyone giving nature's toilet paper a touch. That's like 30-ply right there.
Ephemera explains why she does this work to one of the attendees.
Science should give you awe and a wonder for the natural world and like a curiosity to explore more. What we're doing is meaningful, enacting change and building community. I'm working on building the world that I want to live in.
Before the walk is over, Ephemera tries her mom again. This time she picks up.
Happy Mother's Day! I am here with a large crowd. We dragged them outside and we're finishing up our hike.
Thank you!
Drag Me Outside aims to create a welcoming space for anyone who wants to learn more and have a great time doing it. From the top of Mount Tabor, I'm Lisa Wood for OPB.
The U.S. military wants troops on the front lines to be able to make their own food, literally. It's trying to develop ways to use microbes to create meals, using a process that would look more at home in a laboratory than a kitchen. Jay Price of the American Homefront Project reports on the futuristic quest for alternative proteins.
That thing that Napoleon supposedly said about armies marching on their stomachs, it still resonates. But in an age when combat might mean hunkering down for days without a way to sneak food shipments past swarms of enemy attack drones, it's a problem. One potential solution may be the kind of equipment found in a couple of labs at North Carolina State University.
The tanks that you see are what we call bioreactors.
Rohan Shearwiker is director of the university's Bezos Center for Sustainable Protein. He's standing outside a glass-walled lab, gesturing inside at several gleaming stainless steel tanks about as tall as a person. They look like smaller versions of the tanks you might see at a brew pub, but surrounded by a lot more pipes, valves, and wires.
The whole environment inside is very favorable to these microbes to either grow themselves to create that biomass to go in food or generate those proteins or enzymes or those other ingredients that we would then use in making food products.
Microbes grown in such tanks can be engineered for attributes like high levels of protein and other nutrients, and for taste, or programmed to act like tiny factories producing molecules of useful substances like proteins and fats. The Army recently put out a call for proposals for ways to make such proteins. Its long-term goal is to foster the development of portable equipment small enough for units on the front lines to create their own food. Nicole Favreau-Farhadi is a research chemist for the U.S. Army Combat Capabilities Development Command Soldier Center, the lab that put out the proteins proposal.
Basically, we would be able to produce food where and when it's needed. It would be nutrient dense, and no military in the history has ever had that capability.
Farhadi is careful, though, to characterize the idea of food production in combat zones as a distant goal. The more immediate plan is to use the technology to increase the nutrition density of MREs, the packaged meals that soldiers eat in the field. It's essential, Farhadi says, for MREs to get lighter.
Warfighters carry anywhere from 60 to 100 pounds of gear, and every pound that we can remove translates directly to speed, endurance, reduced injury rates. And the conventional protein sources are very heavy.
And she says decreasing the size and weight of rations has another benefit. The smaller or less frequent they are, the harder food shipments are for enemies to target and destroy with drones or precision long-range missiles.
Every calorie that has to travel from the continental United States could be delayed, it could be destroyed. And so the goal is for better protein that travels better.
Alternative proteins could also provide new options for meatless and plant-based field rations, things that troops have increasingly asked for. And while growing nutritious, good-tasting food in tanks may sound unlikely, it's already being done. Examples include some of the meat substitutes you can find in supermarkets, like corn, spelled Q-U-O-R-N, which is made from a microfungus usually found in soil. Insulin, the diabetes drug, also has been made in this way for decades, as has rennet, a key ingredient in cheese. Adam Lehman is a scientist with the Good Food Institute, a think tank focused on accelerating the use of plant-based and cultivated proteins.
The technology is ready. The infrastructure is small but growing to actually be able to provide these ingredients. So I think these will demonstrate that they're good sources of protein for folks, that they can meet the military specs and can be used widely.
And maybe one day, even be made by the troops themselves. I'm Jay Price reporting.
This story was produced by the American Homefront Project, a public media collaboration that reports on American military life and veterans.
Local and regional news on KMUN is brought to you by our news partners and by the KMUN News Department. That includes news host and production assistant Ava Berardi and me, news director Katie Frankowitz. If you have a news tip or story idea, email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, at kmun.org. For more local and regional news, visit kmun.org/news. The KMUN News Hour airs every weekday beginning at 7:59 in the morning and 4:59 in the evenings. It features 20 minutes of local and regional news on Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, beginning at 8:29 in the morning and 5:29 in the evening. On Fridays, you can catch our short news break just after the start of the news hour. If you've ever missed a newscast or our morning and evening times are not convenient for you, you can always find a podcast version of the day's news at kmun.org/news. Thanks for listening and stay tuned. American Democracy Minute is coming up next.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Two Trump campaign attorneys and a campaign aide who allegedly organized the 2020 fake elector scheme in Wisconsin and other swing states finally face arraignment June 16th. It's the only remaining criminal investigation of the plot to overturn the 2020 election. Trump attorneys Kenneth Chesbrough and Jim Troupe and campaign staffer Mike Roman were charged by Wisconsin's attorney general in 2024 with Class H felonies for forgery. Documents show Chesbrough allegedly hatched the fake elector scheme with Troupe, a former Dane County judge. Roman allegedly prepared and facilitated delivery of the documents. The documents were signed by 10 Wisconsin Republicans as if they were bona fide electors, certifying that Donald Trump had won Wisconsin. Joe Biden won Wisconsin by just over 20,000 votes. Criminal charges against the fake electors were dismissed. The arraignment has been delayed by dozens of motions from the defendant's attorneys, with Troupe recently arguing he can't get a fair trial in Dane County. Troupe recently applied for $3.2 million from the now retracted Trump Anti-Weaponization Fund, claiming legal expenses and the, quote, annihilation of his law practice. Chesbrough reportedly cooperated with state and federal investigators. All three defendants were pardoned by President Trump, but that pardon does not extend to state charges. We've linked to more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org.
You're listening to KMUN.